Welcome to an iTech 15 speaker presentation. This file has been brought to you by Christian Education National. Enjoy and connect to www.cen.edu.au for more information.
Some of you have heard me. I've been doing the introductions in this space every day. But if you don't know me, my name's Noelle Sketcher. I'm the principal at Mount Evelyn Christian School. And it's my great privilege for this last session to introduce Sarah Deutscher to you. If you don't know Sarah, perhaps Sarah's mainly hung around. Well, we know her very well in the Victorian schools here. She's done a lot of work with our teachers and our students, and we love her to bits. And so it's really great that she's able to be in this space this afternoon. Sarah's sort of like Mark Sayers' offsider that you met this morning. Sarah also co-founded Uber Ministries, and they're both in leadership at Red Church. And so it's really exciting. Sometimes when we get one, we get the other as well. And that's really exciting to hear from both of them. It says on the profile that you've had on your app, that Sarah is deeply passionate about authentic discipleship in today's world and the formation of leaders who can be empowered and equipped to lead in today's unique cultural climate. What Sarah talks about is spot on with what our theme has been about for this conference, reading world and word. And what she's going to share about in terms of social media, some of us have heard her talk about technology, social media, and she's just got fabulous things to say. We would understand that the use of technology and the idol of technology and using technology to serve our God is one of the greatest challenges we experience in our schools every day. Certainly as a leader in a school, the whole social media thing does our heads in. Yeah, so much time and effort can be gone with helping our students to make good choices and appropriate choices and choices that honour themselves and God in the way they're using technology. So we're really rapt that Sarah can come and share with us. She's going to be getting you to chat and sort of ask questions throughout. So there's not going to be an opportunity at the end to ask questions. Sarah's session will go for the full hour. So we just really encourage you to participate as she invites you to do throughout the session. But can you please welcome Sarah?
Thank you, Narelle. Hands up if you've heard me speak before, just so I get some... Oh, stuck at you. Hi, again. If I haven't met you before, my name is Sarah. I'm a middle-aged woman. I know. I am a daughter, I am a sister, I am a friend, I have three nephews, I have 10 adopted nieces and nephews. I live alone with a cat. I would have a dog, but my property is too small, so I am the quintessential cat woman. But she's great. Suki is great. And I really do honour the opportunity to speak with you guys. It's not something I take lightly. I honour what you do, and I honestly don't know I could do it. What you do day in, day out, in that washing machine of a school environment, alone is huge, let alone straddling what it means to be a Christian discipler in an education setting is full on. So hands off to you guys, hats off to you guys. And my metaphors, hats off to you guys, and thank you for the honour of spending time with you. I am going to do that annoying thing. I know Narelle's already done it, but because I want to speak to you and not kind of at you, if there's spare seats in front of you, come take a seat. Everyone actually come a row forward. We're going to gather as one big collective. Do some stretching. This is your last session, yeah, for the week. So let's gather together and make this a little more intimate.
Hello?
Totally fine. No, don't worry. Okay. It just helps me to speak to you, not at you, and it helps me, so thank you for that. I do have to be on the stage so the camera can see me, because screens are important in our culture. in case you had not noticed. I'm going to start this session with scripture. And it's the beginning of our story. It's the beginning of our narrative. It's the beginning of the big story of God, which is just as real and pertinent today as it was several thousand years ago. And it goes something like this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day, .. Day two, day three, day four, day five, day six. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea." And on goes the narrative. We have here a creator. We have here a God who creates. We have here a God who separates things, who puts space between things, who speaks things into being, who births realities, who births universes that we're still trying to understand, who spoke you into being, who breathed his image in you, just as Justine ended her session before. And this is a story that is so familiar to us, we've potentially forgotten it. And so I just wanted to start this session with that passage, and I'm just going to pray before we get into the meat of things. Creator God, the God that created this universe, the God that we have the privilege and the mystery of knowing, I want to thank you for all that you've spoken the last 3 days. I want to thank you for the people that are in this room. I want to thank you for what you're doing in their lives. I want to thank you for what you're birthing in them and through them. I ask and pray that you would come and that you would hover over us this afternoon and that you would speak things, that your word would be heard, that your word would divide soul and spirit and bone and marrow, and that you would minister to us and equip us into what you're calling us to as teachers and educators. In Jesus' name, amen. So what I'm wanting to speak about today is a bit of social media. A fascinating thing, isn't it, social media? And what I would like to get you to do, actually, if you've got a smartphone, I want you to pull it out. If you have a social app on your phone, I want you to open it. Could be one of your choice. Might be Facebook, might be Twitter. Might be Instagram. I'll give you a couple of seconds to organise that, if you weren't already looking at it. Which, can I say, this morning's session, I saw you all looking at your social media. Which, I'm not here to judge, it's just interesting. Open up your social media, and then what I would like you to do is to pass your phone with the app open to the person on your left. Okay. I didn't say you could talk. Just pass it over. I want you to note what you're feeling and why you're feeling what you're potentially feeling. I still didn't say you could talk. My goodness, what is this? There's an uproar. We're teachers. And I want you to breathe deep, and I invite you to be okay with what you've just done. This is okay. You can trust the person next to you because they're in the same situation. And what I would just like to do is just have a look at this picture, have a look at the thousands of year-old story of Genesis 1, of this birthing and this creating of man in God's image, this invitation for mankind to rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and to have dominion over the earth. The Hebrew was the word shoma, which is more than steward. It is that I, as God, in my sovereignty, have given you control and you can create of this world what you so choose. And mankind get to do one thing. They get to, first of all, name the animals. God names them, they name the animals, and off we trot. We have all sorts of stories over the past several thousands of years of how that's gone, and all of those stories have led us here today. Here we are. And this is what we've become. I don't need to tell you about the mysteries and the intricacies of social media. We all know that it's everywhere. We all know that it's changing our identity. We all know that it's affecting humanity. You more than me live every day with the realities of that, with the students in your classrooms, let alone your own heart and your own responses to what is going on. We know it's very popular. Do you know, there's 190 million tweets. It's just Twitter. 190 million tweets per day, 9,100 per second. Message. I can't even, So many things going out there, so many things in this ethereal world that are beckoning for your attention and beckoning for your heart and wanting to shape your identity. I guess what I want to focus on in this, most importantly, is not a judgment against social media, and I apologise if I come across like that. I am a Pharisee. But I have a really deep heart and burden for a severe distortion of reality that is occurring in our culture and what you have to work with as teachers and if not in your own personal life. Before I go into that though, have a chat to the person next to you. Where are you at with this whole world of social media? Don't pass your phones back, they just stay in your neighbour. Oh, hello. Don't pass your phones back. They're off limits, people. Have a chat to the person next to you. What are you noticing? What's disturbing you? What's exciting you? And where are you at with social media? I'm only going to give you 30 seconds because I've got a lot to cover. Go. Okay. Sorry to cut you short. Yell out to me. What are some of the things that you're noticing or observing or feeling about what your students are doing with social media? Yell out to me. Don't be shy. The age of kids. So how, are you talking about how young they are? How young are you talking? Yeah, okay. Younger. 6-year-olds. Oh, ouch. Okay, what else? So we've got the age of... Right. Hands up if you're still feeling a bit anxious that you don't have your phone on you. You're totally fine. You're not nervous about what the person's going to do to your image. Okay, so we've got the young age of kids that have got profiles. We've got the anxiety and or frustration if you take their social media away because it's such an important part of relating and being. And someone over here, yeah. Yeah. Yes. 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 I will protect your identity. And the reason I did this, I was going to talk about this later, but the reason I did this is important because you know how sometimes you can explain information and it just goes into your head and there's a difference between actually feeling what's going on. What is going on in you there is a disconnect between your identity and the identity that is out of your control and the separation between truth and reality. That is what you're feeling. Social media, I'm going to touch on in a moment, is actually an illusion, but our brains are changing to evolve to assume that that is actually who we are. So when students who are 6 years old are forming their identity based on this technology, this illusion is at work, and you can question whether that matters or not. But when you look at Genesis 1, and that mankind is made in God's image, birthed, breathed imagination into that being, and that being isn't actually what's being fostered in this, then we have all sorts of consequences, which I'm going to touch on in a moment. One more thing that you guys, I've got the sun in my eyes. One more thing that you've observed or noticed or... Pardon me? Fear of missing out. Thank you. We have got a huge robbing of presence. A robbing of presence, an ability to be fully present where you are, an ability for your students to be present anywhere, an ability for all the senses to be engaged at one given time, an ability for, if one of the keynotes was speaking this morning, and this again is not a judgment, although I am a Pharisee, if one of the keynotes is speaking and you're on your Instagram feed, you're actually not present. But you're actually not present with your Instagram feed either, because that's actually an illusion and not reality. And so there's this disconnect that is happening. And the reason I'm so burdened by this, and the reason I might come across as judgmental, hopefully I don't, is that we are missing out on what the incarnate God, who came in flesh, who is speaking, wants to say in those spaces. And we're floating above the surface, disconnected between this chasm, between truth and reality. So that's sort of what I want to speak about. So moving on, we could have talked for longer, but I've got time to keep so you can get out of here. I would like you to take a step back for a second, and I'd love for us to just look for a second at the world of the senses. That when God made you, when he made mankind, male and female, he made us with eyes that see, with nose that smells, with taste, with touch, with ears that hear. Has anyone read The Brain That Changes Itself or done any of that looking into neuroplasticity and how the brain is amazing and how it's absolutely amazing and it's so amazing they're still learning about it? One of the things that they're finding out about the brain is the brain is ridiculously intelligent, but it's actually not that smart, and that what it does is it just finds patterns in how you live your life and then builds brain maps around the different areas, lobes of the brain, based on the patterns that you're teaching it. So there's a part of the brain where you see. You don't actually see with your eyes, you see with your brain. There's a part of your brain where you actually hear, and you don't hear with your ears. That's the vessel to enable the brain to interpret what you're hearing. If you don't use one of your senses, the brain is so efficient that it will take over the map. Where if this part of the brain is meant to be for hearing and you don't use it, then another part of the brain will take over it and you have a more pronounced ability, which is why blind people have amazing senses with touch and with hearing. And so when we look at these senses, you probably come down to two of the most popular would be hearing and seeing. And you might have been asked before, I know I have, I don't know, I've asked the question. If you were to be born or to be either blind or deaf, what would you choose? Blind or deaf? Would you rather be blind or would you rather be deaf? Deaf? Deaf. Would you rather be deaf? Have a chat to the person next to you just quickly. We'll do a vote. Okay. We're going to just do a quick hands up vote. Hands up if you would prefer to be blind. I'm blind at the moment. I can't. Okay. Oh. Okay. Yes. You prefer. Okay. So what's that, maths teachers? A quarter? Less? Less than a quarter would prefer to be blind. Who would prefer to be deaf? Wow, the vast, far vast majority. Okay, I would prefer to be deaf as well. I think being able to see, I think being able to know where you're walking, to be able to see the expression on your loved ones' faces, to be able to see the trees blowing the wind, all of those things, I'm with you. What I'd like to do is just take us through a bit of an exercise. I'm just going to read to you this. I'm reading from Jacques Ellul's book, which has fallen apart, called The Humiliation of the Word. And he just explains the difference between seeing and hearing. And he talks about the scene of a beach. So have a look at this image as I read to you. I look out in front of me and perceive the sea lit up out to the horizon. I look around me to my left and right. I see the limitless straight line of the beach and behind it the dunes all in space. With my gaze, I make the space my own. The objects are clear and plain. I see the wind bend over to the ground. I see the wind bend over to the ground and the reeds that keep the dunes in place. I record these images one by one, and their juxtaposition shows me the real world in which I live, the world around me. I am at the centre of this universe by means of my gaze, which sweeps across this space and lets me know everything in it. By combining these images of reality, I grasp it as a whole and become a part of it as a result of my looking. I am the point of departure from which the universe and space are ordered. My vision situates me in every other component, placing each where it belongs. As I look, I discover order. My looking is in itself what constitutes this order by means of its sequence, which provides me with a progressive discovery of everything around me. The very fact that I express myself in this way shows how inevitably my sight makes me the centre of the world. It lets me know what is to the left and the right of me, what is near and what is far away. All of reality unfolds itself to me little by little. Without sight, I would be suddenly deprived of the very possibility of grasping reality and of situating myself in space. What he's saying there is that with your eyes, you receive an interpretation of the world. With your eyes are the center point of reality and the center point of your world. What's to your left? What's in front of you? What's to your right? You grasp and interpret these images that are given to you, and you receive this interpretation of reality. Does that make sense? When you close your eyes, no cheating, because this is not about seeing the next one. This is about hearing. We're still at the beach. Eyes closed. I hear noises. The wind is blowing through these pine trees. In the distance, the sea roars. I can judge its force and its condition. The pine cones are crackling, and I hear them burst. Their sound reminds me how hot it is. The sequence of sound sometimes forms a symphony. Noises come to me, and I do not turn my ears toward a certain spot where I suspect there might be something to hear. I direct my gaze, turning it spontaneously toward a certain face, toward a landscape which awaits me. I am the subject, and I act and decide on what I want to see. Sounds come to me, and I receive them when they are produced. They form a sequence of impressions that carves up time. A baby's cry drowns out everything else. Instead of a symphony, now I hear an outburst. The noise assails and haunts me. I cannot close anything as I would my eyes to shut it out. You can open your eyes now. Same scene, being at a beach, but a different understanding of reality. What Jatzalul is saying is that with your eyes, reality is given to you and you receive. And with your ears, you actually actively participate in your interpretation of something. You know how when you see a movie of a book you've read and it's just not the same? That's this. When you're reading something, your imagination is sparked. When you're receiving words, when you're listening with your ears, you are creating, you are participating in this world of reality. When you're watching a movie, and don't get me wrong, I'm up there with the best of them, you're receiving someone else's interpretation and it comes to you and you just absorb it. We need both. We need eyes and we need ears. But after looking at this and doing some research in it, I'm now at the stage where I would choose to prefer to be blind than to be deaf. Because to be blind means that I'm participating and I'm engaging and I'm active in my interpretation of reality. To be deaf means that I'm just giving what he's showing me. And I have a concern that when it comes to our brain mapping in our world, that our hearing, our listening, our ability to actively engage has been overrun by a passive response to whatever is given to us, and that our world is being saturated with images. Images are everywhere, in case you had not noticed. And, you know, whether it be photos, Instagram, billboards, advertising, magazines, Times Square, images are everywhere. And we now, brain wiring wise, habitually visualize everything. That means we're constantly being told what to interpret, what is reality. Recently, there was an art installation in Europe by this clever artist who decided to print a day's worth of photos that were uploaded to Flickr. Just Flickr. That's not Instagram. Flickr's not the most dominant photo-carrying kind of thing. Instagram is. In one day, over 1 million images were uploaded. And so he printed them all off and put them in this art space, which I think is so great. And so if you came to this exhibition, you're walking over all these photos, and this is just one day's capturing of reality for people. We're saturated by these images. And I guess what my concern about this is that when it comes to images, we start to turn passive, and the collective opinion tends towards conformity and away from imagination. That when it comes to images, we're told how to perceive reality. And as Marshall McLuhan, which I've been to many CEN events before, and he's always quoted, the message is in the medium. The message is in the medium, meaning that the medium has an effect on the message you receive. For some reason, I can read the Bible on my phone and it's just not the same as reading the Bible with a tactile... Am I alone in that? Is that just my pharisaical ways? No? There's something about that same text, but different medium. And so all these images, we're being saturated with these images, your students are being saturated with, and their brains are learning that they need to respond and adapt and be reshaped to receive these images and interpret reality in such a way. So this has changed the role and function of the camera. There's a photographer, Diana Litovsky, who's from New York, and she used to go to social events and just take photos, and she noticed a dramatic, now this is going to surprise you, but it's a really interesting effect on the camera now. She was saying 5 years ago you would take a camera to an event and you would record the event and no one would really notice and you could be a really smart photojournalist. She said now you take a camera to an event and people perform for the camera. That the camera now changes people's understanding of what it means to be present, because what it means to be present means to be performing, and what it means to be performing is to project a version of one's identity to this world that no one knows really is there. It's got something to do with the internet, and no one even really knows what that is, or where all these images sit until someone prints them all off Flickr. And she stated that instead of an instrument of voyeurism, the camera becomes a welcomed participant. The women photographed are not just permitting, but actually performing for the camera. It connects them, the virtual exhibitionists, to a vast, anonymous audience. That there is this hunger in every single one of us to be told that we're loved, to be told that we're okay, to have something or someone or someone's to mirror back to us that we are okay, that our image is okay. And so this thirst and this hunger means that once there's a camera there, I can project whatever version of myself I want to, and I can perform for that camera. We have here an Instagram photo from a friend of mine who, when I saw this, I had the most appropriate response of jealousy, as you often do with Instagram, God bless it. And so when I caught up with her, after seeing this photo, I said, oh, great picture, you know, that looks amazing, how was it? She goes, oh, that. She goes, I left the house tired and grumpy after an argument. This here is a picture of a journalist who started to write about this phenomenon of projecting a version of reality that's different to the truth, this disconnect. And she put this photo on after she felt a bit convicted by her research. She said, look at me riding down the middle of Bright in, you know, in the avenue. Most people saw that and were jealous, of course. She said, you know what? 10 minutes before, I was in a fit of tears because I was sick of journalism and I was sick of the deadlines and I was sick of having to travel by myself for my job. When you were given that image and when you were shown a version of reality and when the interpretation was placed upon you, did you think that that might have been the true story? This here is probably one of the most beautiful selfies I've personally seen, because it doesn't have sunglasses and long straight blonde hair, but I just find it so sultry. And the story behind this one, the girl who took this said that she... you know, this could look like a casual blue-eyed selfie. She goes, not quite. It took 22 takes to get this look, and I was so sick of looking into the sun that my eyes were watering. But there is something in our fallen human nature that so craves shalom, that so craves this perfect world, that we put all this effort to projecting this image out there, even though it's not truly what's going on inside. This is the last slide to Mark's talk, with the happy circle of friends, but the despondency and the anxiety. And I don't need to tell you the consequences of this. We have a pandemic of loneliness in our world at the moment. We have an epidemic of anxiety and depression. We have people who feel disembodied from who they really are, compared to the need to get the crowd's approval and the feeling you potentially may have felt when you gave your phone with an open social app to someone else is only a teeny tiny taste of the true new reality that your students live in every day. And it's far from the cry of peace and presence and wholeness and security that the Father's heart has for you, he has for me, and he has for your students. So what we have here is this disconnect between what is real and what is projected, between the concrete, which is leaving the house grumpy after a fight, and the projected, which is a sparkly view of a wonderful vacation. Because the sparkly view of a wonderful vacation is exciting. The concrete is mundane. The concrete is boring. But the concrete is the one that a Jewish carpenter entered, got his hands dirty, worked with his tools, worked with the timber, built chairs, built tables, engaged with those who were in his midst. We're not doing that because we're living for an audience we don't even know. Eugene Peterson, who wrote a brilliant book I read every year, I really encourage you to read it, Run With the Horses. It's basically contemporary commentary on Jeremiah. It's brilliant. He starts to talk about the lure of the crowd. He says that crowds lie. The more people, the less truth. In crowds, the truth is flattened to fit a slogan. Not only the truth spoken, but the truth that is lived. The truth that is lived is reduced and distorted by the crowd. The crowd makes us spectators, passive in the presence of excellence or beauty. The crowd makes consumers of us, inertly taking in whatever is pushed at us. As spectators and consumers, the central and foundational elements of our being human, our ability to create, our drive to excel, our capacity to commune with God, atrophy. Atrophy to waste away. is basically saying because of our pursuit for the crowd, our ability to be human is wasting away. Then when you think about the crowd, you go, okay, yeah, the crowd, I've got that desire too, I'm human. I'm like, yeah, the crowd, I care about the crowd, I care what people think, but who are the people? Like, who are they? Like, who is the public? Who is this crowd? Søren Kierkegaard said it really well when he said, talking about the public, it's spirit, a monstrous obstruction, an all-encompassing something that is nothing, a mirage. This phantom is the public. The public made of unsubstantial individuals who are never united or never can be united in any situation, and they are yet to be claimed a whole. The crowd, this public, is this illusion where we think these people exist and are watching us and they're not. It's actually the spirit of the age, which is akin to the prince of the power, the darkness of the air, who is at work to steal and kill and destroy the glory of God that you're made in the image of, the glory of God that your students are made in the image of, so that they live but a vapor and not a full present sense of being. So probably one of the biggest consequences we have when it comes to obsession with images and our growing obsession with images is conformity and passivity. A robbing of imagination, a robbing of the ability to create, a robbing of the ability to engage, a robbing of the ability to be present. We've become machines. I can't see your expressions because the sun is shining in my face. Have a chat to the person next to you. What resonates with you? What makes you feel angry? What do you disagree with? Have a quick chat and then we'll move on to an alternative. Okay, 20 seconds to finish your thought. Do we have out there a couple of questions or insights or thoughts that you want to share to the larger group before we move on? Don't put your hand up because I can't see you. Just start to yell. Do you want to explain more your thought? Yes, because the projection and the reality would have been one thing, as opposed to a projected version of reality, which wasn't actually true. Yeah, that's good. Sorry, what's your name? Jerry just said that he wonders if it's more, not so much about images, but about context, and the fact that the images are portraying a different context to what had happened, whereas if it was a photo that reflected or a video what actually happened, you wouldn't have that same dissonance. Is that right, so to speak? So this is about reality and how we project reality, which is, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's an interesting thought. So the thought there was the heart behind being encouraging to people so that you could project a positive response, I guess. The funny thing is what sort of percentage of when people look at Facebook or Instagram do you think people feel either jealous, anxiety or anger? Give me a percentage. Just yell it out. Over 95%. So we're living in a world where your students are experiencing levels of anxiety you're not actually meant to experience or meant to have, because they're not present there. And I had a rage at my church a couple of weeks ago because, you know, people were doing silly things on Instagram and I've got to keep them in line. But there was this projection of, you know, my wonderful wife and this is what she's done and this is what she's achieved and she's so great, da, 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 which is so good. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm proud of this girl's achievements myself. But I can go to her in person and say, congratulations, well done, person to person, in presence. What happens when other girls in my church who are A, either single, or B, who are sick and aren't able to have achievements, no one notices or acknowledges their secret achievements or publicizes them. What happens when they read that? Because we compare ourselves to the boat, or the people in the boat, they go, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not like that. I'm not living. And the presence and the place God has placed them is then not actualized because they feel that they're distorted. They're in the wrong as opposed to where they should be. It's just interesting. One more thought before I move on, because I'm aware I've got 15 minutes left.
Isn't it a concern that Facebook images, Instagram, the rest of it, can trivialise that which is really significant?
Yeah.
Say, some graduation, whatever.
Yes.
But can make it important, can validate spaghetti bolognese?
Yes. Yes. So. Yes. Well, it could be an achievement that he made spaghetti bolognese, but you're right. And I think Justine Toe touched on this, which said Google has put everything on a level playing field. And if the message is in the medium, then the message is the same. And so there is no highs, lows, difference. Our senses, which are, you know, tasting and smelling, aren't actualised. It's just sight that we're actually neutralised. And nothing's worth celebrating anymore. Nothing's important anymore. So, yeah. Yes, one more. Yes. 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 Absolutely. And the dissatisfaction is one of the highest consequences, which then creates the anxiety and the envy, the sense of alienation and isolation. Everyone else has got this great life. I don't, even though no one's got this great life. It's this weird, weird thing that's going on. And so you can see how the wool's been pulled over our eyes. And so what I want to contrast this with, sorry, just to quickly move on, I want to honour the time, is this whole concept of words. Now, this is a message I wanted to give, and you guys have given me the opportunity to put together. So thank you. I wanted to talk on this message before I even saw the theme of the conference. So thank you, conference, for being on par with my desires. And what I'm wanting to do here is not just words, not just a spoken word, because we all know there's enough of those out there. It's not just the Twitter words. It's not even just the reading word. It's this concept of hearing. That if seeing renders us passive, if seeing in isolation renders us passive, words create in us a world. Creativity, imagination. I want us to begin to resurrect that kind of concept. And I just have to. If I started with Genesis 1, being made in the image of God, that's the only image that should be out there. I've got to start with John 1 here. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word, capital W, was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. The Word creates. The Word speaks life. The Word separates. The Word creates mystery. The Word invigorates. And I have this burden and this sense that words are being robbed and words are losing their meaning and words are everywhere and they don't mean a heck of a lot. I'm going to move on really quickly because of time. This was my desktop picture for about 2 years because I'd been on Facebook and I'd been on Instagram and I'd heard of this thing called Twitter and I'd read all these articles and I was listening to lots of conversations and I was just sick of opinion. I was sick of words. I was sick of rah, rah, rah. And I'm the most verbose person I know. And I'm like, there's so many words. I just want the world to shut up. So this is my desktop picture and it made me feel better. I work with Mark. My office is next to his. He came in the other day and he saw this picture and he goes, oh, that's you at work with me talking because he's such an outward processor. So I was also thinking that, you know, metamodernism, Gnosticism, I don't know what you're talking about. And I just feel overwhelmed, just words. But there is a word, capital W, that is living, that creates, that is sitting here in this room, has been speaking to you your whole life, has been speaking to you over the past 3 days. And the invitation for you and I to listen to the word, to turn off all the other stuff, turn off the noise, the chatter, the clutter, and just listen to that word. This is me thinking words have lost their meaning. They no longer hold weight. Marketers have had to make things amazing and wonderful and the best shampoo you will ever have with the most fruity senses. We've all bought that bottle of wine that looked great in the description. Hues of plum scentedness and accents of pepper in an oak cooked barrel. Oak cooked barrel, you get my point. And then you have that $6 bottle of wine, which may or may not have been my Saturday night. And it was gross. The tannins were horrible. We as Christians have had to make everything awesome. Oh, so awesome. That's just awesome. You know, I'll get off the stage and someone say, that was awesome. And it's not. It's okay. It might be good, but it's not awesome. And because awesome hasn't satisfied its meaning, because it's left empty and not fulfilled the weight behind that word, we now have to have phenomenal. So everything is phenomenal now, and so on and so forth, because we're at this grab for meaning, this grab for weight, this grab for reality, this grab for truth, this desire for truth. And yet we're God, who's the only thing worth calling awesome, if not phenomenal. You go back to Genesis 1 and he says, let there be light. And there is so much meaning and weight behind his words that he says, let there be light, and there was. Let me separate the sky from the land and create an expanse. And it was so. Let me create living creatures in the sea and flying creatures in the air. And it was. Everything he says happens. And there's no hyperbole. There's no exaggeration. There's no illusion. There's weight and there's meaning. And he means what he says. Let us make mankind in our image, male and female. There was evening, there was morning, there was rhythm. And he looked on all that he made and he said, this is fan flippin' phenomenal. He said it was very good. Because very good to God means very good. I just want to tell you what you already know. And that is his word is alive. His word is real. His word is living and active. It is sharper than any double-edged sword. It speaks truth. It speaks creation. It speaks participation. It is speaking in you and to you and inviting you to engage in his heart, to join heaven and earth, not into a disconnected reality, but into a connected reality. I've covered that. Oh no, I'm going to say this again. I'm going back a couple of steps, but I just want to say this because I know you'll get this. This is about how there's so many words in the world and we're drowning, and that's why I need that desktop picture. We have an excess of talk devoid of meaning and veracity. We're satiated with political speeches, which say nothing, with false conversations, with books paid to meet contract, in spite of the lack of anything to say, the speaker continues as if he were a word mill moved by the wind, which might be me in about 7 minutes. And he becomes responsible for the fact that no one can any longer take any word seriously. No word can be taken seriously because the rush of these words prevents us from discovering the one which in the midst of the torrent has meaning and deserves to be listened to. I did my quiet time yesterday and I got up this morning and I could not remember what my quiet time was yesterday. The reason that is because our brains are actually changing to keep up with the onslaught of words that are chucked at us every day, let alone the images that are pulling for distraction every moment, to now what's called shallow brains. Have you heard about the shallows, the book? And the argument of the shallows in the book is that neurons which embed deeply and pathways which embed lessons, whether that be emotional, educational, relational, knowledge, are actually not embedding deeply. That we have such a fast onslaught of information chucked at us that the neurons are physiologically just building on the surface and not going deep. I did my quiet time yesterday. I can't remember what it was. It didn't imbibe into me because I've got too much information in my brain from the past 24 hours. And my brain has forgotten what it means to reflect. In a world such as ours, there is no stimulus to reflection. With images, there is no stimulus to action. With too many words, there is no stimulus to reflection. And to quote someone, I wish I knew who it was, but I read it the other day, he said, I used to love reading and I would scuba dive into the depths of the meaning of the words and now I just jet ski across the surface. Which is why I can read one of the most amazing tweets, but it won't embed or do anything because it's amongst thousands of others. And it's just bouncing off. And I'm sitting here lost and disconnected and confused about my place and my presence in reality. John 1, the Word became flesh. The Word, the Creator. The Word that creates. The Word that gives meaning. The Word that is weighty, is true and real and full of integrity, becomes flesh itself and has made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory. The glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father full of grace and truth. No one has ever seen God. No one has ever seen God. But God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. And if you keep reading John, and I encourage you to, you will see one big theme of John's, and that is to see. And it is not a physical seeing. It is a spiritual seeing. It is about a light that has come to the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. It is about disciples who witness these miracles and see, you know, John 6, see all these bread being multiplied and fish being multiplied. But the disciples are not content because of what they see. I'd be pretty content if I saw that. If all of a sudden I just saw heaps of chocolate appear, I'd be pretty impressed. If I saw it's so hungry and there's heaps of fish and heaps of loaves, like, and with leftovers, I'd be pretty impressed because, like John 6, he says, you're not impressed because of what you've seen. You're at peace and you have meaning, my paraphrase, because you have eaten and are satisfied. Desire speaks. Satisfaction is silence. We have a world full of desire and it's screaming at everybody, saying, please like me. Please tell me I'm okay. And instead the Word comes flesh and looks you in the eyes and looks through you and sees everything and says, I see you. I know you. I have got words for you. And so what I would like to do, oh, hang on, check that out, huh? Check that out. You know, I've got 2 minutes left. I could have just put that picture up. We could have stared at that for an hour. That's my talk. What are we missing out on? He is still speaking. He is still creating. He is not at the bottom of someone's bed tucked away. Proverbs 8 says that wisdom is at the busiest corner of the marketplace shouting out, listen to me, get wisdom, get understanding. Do not enter the house of folly, enter the house of wisdom. I have got wisdom, I have got a banquet for you. I have made it myself. I have mixed the wine, I have built the banquet. Will you come and sit and eat and be satisfied? The house of folly says, I've got water and bread, and both of them were stolen. So what I want to do for 2 minutes, I'll do it too, is let's just sit in silence. Let's let the word of God speak. Let's have ears that are open and eyes that are closed. Father God, you're at work. You've been speaking things to us for a long time. You have got words you want to deeply embed into the deepest parts of our souls. There are things you're wanting to create in us and through us. I thank you that you, the living word, became flesh. You were the connection between truth and reality. You look us in the eyes and you speak. I ask and I pray for an increase in your revelation in all of our hearts and lives. that you would give us your wisdom in how to lead in this culture. That you would fill us with your joy and with your hope. That you would teach us to be present to ourselves, to you, to our loved ones, to our students. That we would be your incarnation to them. Thank you that you didn't send your love via a text message, but you came in the flesh to be present, to be known, to be heard and to be seen. In Jesus' name, amen. There's going to be one big question you all have, and that is, what do we do with social media? I'm going to close in answering that for you. Social media is not evil. Human nature is fallen. And the best thing you can do with your social media and the social media of your students is to just bracket, put it in brackets so that it's not the full sentence, the full experience, the full life, but it's put to its proper place on the shelf that's looked at every now and then, but it's not the stage and it's not your life. And it's not who you are and it's not who they are. And by being present and speaking words of truth and meaning and weight into their life, you will give them an alternative that is way more satisfying than the one that they're scurrying for as they pursue meaning in a very anxious age. Thank you.
Welcome to an iTech 15 speaker presentation. This file has been brought to you by Christian Education National. Enjoy and connect to www.cen.edu.au for more information.